Ahoy there, landlubbers! Whispers in the Sea is an actual play series drawing elements from stories of fantasy horror, political drama, and swashbuckling action and adventure pirate stories. As such, a list of content warnings will always be made available in the description. Sailors, and welcome to another episode of Tales Yet Told, an actual play podcast dedicated to telling weird and fun stories full of imagination, thoughtful characterization, and inclusivity. I am your most humble of game masters, Kendrick, or Kendo if you prefer. I use they, he pronouns, and with me today are the saltiest sea dogs a captain can ask for, Gus.
Yeah, I'm Gus. I use he, him pronouns. I'm gonna be playing Felix Cormier today and on every other episode of this podcast. And I think it's going to be a raucous good time.
Yeah. You know who else is a raucous good time? Dr. Hilda.
Oh my gosh, that's me. I'm Hilda, and I guess I'm Dr. Hilda. I play Avery Morrigan, whose pronouns are he, him, but my pronouns as Hilda are she, her. I'm really excited to dive in today.
Yes. You know who else is excited to dive in today?
Ah, nailed the transition.
You did. See, someone's learning how to play the game.
I'm learning. We're all learning.
You know who else is learning? Marceline.
Whoa. Hi. I'm learning.
Hi, learning.
Hi, learning.
I'm Marceline. I use she, her pronouns, and I play Bryn Thoreau, and she also uses she, her pronouns, which is crazy and fun. And man, I am having a good old fashioned jubilee.
A jubilee? You know who else is having a good old fashioned jubilee? Ellis.
Hello, I'm Ellis. I use they, them pronouns. I'll be portraying Thorin, who uses he, him pronouns, and Eldoris, who uses she, her pronouns.
Very, very nice. You know what else would be nice? If you went and followed our podcast over on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr at Tales Yet Told. It's where we give you the... Okay, I'm done with the voice. I'm sorry. The voice is gone. I'm not going to do it for the rest of the intro. I'm a wee bit under the weather, so probably wasn't good for my throat to do that in the first place. But it's where social media is where we post the vast majority of the information that's going on in this podcast, you know? So if you want to know when new episodes are coming out, if an episode's getting delayed, if we're sharing character art, lore, any of the other stuff, sometimes we just like talking to you, go follow us on social media, or you can join the Discord and talk to us personally, and you can find that link on those social media pages. It's linked in there, so maybe
you should do
go
that.
Follow us. Yeah, go follow us. And while you're following us, you know, you're listening to the podcast right now, you've already got your podcatcher open, go ahead and rate and review us wherever you're listening to this. If it's Spotify, if it's Podchaser, if it's Apple Podcasts, if it's some other thing that lets you rate it, please go do that. It's the best way for you to share with other people how you feel about the show, and it lets us know how you're feeling about it as well. We don't pay any money to tell people about the show, you know. We ain't got the dosh for that. So just tell people. People like it when you share things that you like with them.
Tell anyone, well. Just strangers.
Yeah. Yell just it in the streets.
Yeah, if you were at a stop sign, like a stoplight, like on the street, roll down your window and start screaming at people in traffic.
Just start blasting it through the speakers. They're going to listen to
something anyways.
Yeah, blast the podcast through the speakers.
And then everyone will be like, base. Hey, what's that dope story you're listening to?
Yeah.
And you'll drive off and yell into the wind, tales yet told.
You look really cool also.
It looks super cool.
They'll also give you $1 million if you do that. They will. I won't.
Hope you're playing it around some millionaires. So, yeah, I think with that, let us dive right on in.
Split.
Our camera fades in as the sun breaks over the horizon of Kalidora. In the early morning light, we see the Bois Perdu sailing its way through the sea. It's morning now, and the chaotic, violent, and bewildering night that came before is washed away in this sunlight. The crew on the Bois Perdu are slowly getting into working order. The smells of cooking coming from Chef Johan's kitchen further down into the ship helps set the tone for this morning as people energetically are getting up, checking, rigging supplies, and overall just the general state of the ship, especially because the night before it got rocked pretty hard and seemed to be falling apart at the seams. Though now it still feels a bit unstable physically, but it no longer has bits and pieces of it falling off and disappearing into starlight. It is stable for now. You all, that being Thorin, Avery, Felix, and Bryn, have been, in some way or another, told that there was going to be a meeting this morning. A meeting with all of you and Captain Hanno and the other officers of the ship to discuss next moves. You all should be making landfall pretty soon on the coast of mainland Espanora, where the map was leading all of you. And the map doesn't really explain too much other than this is the first of two destinations, so some decisions are going to be made. Especially since the ship itself still needs to be repaired in some fashion. So, you all get up slowly at your own paces before breakfast is finished and served by Johan. You all make your way to Captain Hanno's quarters, where the meeting was said to be taking place. You all file in one after the other. Bryn, you probably having already been here, because you probably came in with Captain Hanno since she stayed by your side last night while you were in the infirmary. But yes, eventually you all make it up here. What are the vibes as you all enter? Just describe me physically how you all are waking up this morning and entering this space. We'll start with Bryn, since you are the first one to enter.
Well, I was going to say, just, I think what they would see coming into this space, Bryn would be in the space next to Hanno, sitting, like, with her legs, crisscross applesauce, hovering above like a chair where the seat would be, and kind of just staring at the ceiling and absentmindedly just glancing around the room, but not very intently.
Thorin, it sounded like you were about to say something.
I walk into the room exceptionally tired, exceptionally sore, a bit of ringing still in my ears, but I can hear now. At this point, I know why we're here, but I'm eager to get the details of not so much what the plan is, but if there is one.
Felix, what do people see when you enter the room? Having just woken up from your very unnerving dream the night before.
I think Felix is quieter than usual. I think there's a sort of, I think he typically has sort of an air of smugness about him. And I think it's not really there now. I think he's more guarded.
Mm-hmm.
He's also, I think he's a little hungover.
Oh, for sure.
I think he maybe has his hat pulled down a little further over his eyes, something like that.
Awesome. Avery, before you make it here, you spent the vast majority of your night experimenting with that arrow. You probably, if you ever went to sleep, probably woke up still at your desk with its shaft in your hands. But the memories of everything that you saw, all of those potential realities, still very much clear in your mind. Is there anything you do with the arrow before you head on up to this meeting?
I think, yeah, I've stayed up basically all night, trying to get as much information as I can from this arrow. And I've definitely just like fallen asleep with it, just like still in my hand at my desk. I probably like start awake and immediately I'm just like looking at the arrow again. And I have like notes written about all the things I've seen that are like, they start really nice and neat and progressively just become more and more like chicken scratch. Like I can barely read them myself, mm-hmm. let alone anybody else.
Yeah.
And like looking at it, I start to see like the pattern that was emerging that you pointed out, like they're all incipient at like the same moment. And I think I just like try to like touch the tip of it one more time. And I try to force it like before that moment to see if that is like something it can do or if it is like stuck there. Basically, I just try to project toward like the other direction, basically.
Yeah. To see if it will show you anything like the past that has happened.
The past that has happened to me or to it or to, yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. I think as you are trying to focus your mind on pushing past the barrier of that moment with you at the helm of the ship being directed by Bryn, you try to focus on anything past that, something that has happened to it, happened to someone else, happened to yourself, and you start to feel something from this arrow seep into you. Something as if it's trying, like you feel like fingers at the edges of your memories, trying to flip through them. Try to find something, almost as if turning through a Rolodex of memories. And you can try to stand your ground from this, prevent this from happening if you would like, because you feel that there is something or someone trying to dig its way deep into your mind to find something. But you could also just allow this to happen to see where it goes.
How uncomfortable is it?
Ooh,
Does it just feel foreign or does it feel like...
It doesn't feel malicious. It feels like there is something else in sharing a space in your head with you that is trying to force you to think about things that, you know, you aren't actively trying to do. I don't know if that is uncomfortable to Avery, but it definitely feels like unlike anything that he has felt before.
Okay. Avery is definitely too curious about, like, what that is and is just going to let it happen.
Okay.
See where it goes.
Okay. Then I have a question for you, Avery. What is your biggest regret? Is there a point in time, a memory, a moment, a conversation, an action that led to a series of events that you would rather not have happened? Is it something with your siblings? Or your father, or at the church, or during your studies, or is it something with Alice? I have a potential thing in mind. I don't know.
It might be the same potential thing.
Oh,
I'm thinking about something with Everett. Maybe
I'm also thinking of something with Everett.
I figured.
I'm thinking of the dinner that you and I have talked about, of mm-hmm. where Everett had a moment.
That's what I was thinking as well. I was just trying to, like, think of how to, like, best, like, where do I insert myself in that narrative that, like, I regret,
yeah. You know? What was your response
mm-hmm.
to your father? Because this is this is an event that ends up leading to Everett being more or less disowned.
Yeah.
How did Avery react? We can set the scene and you can tell me how... Okay. Avery reacts, because the first image you see is what happened. And in your mind, the image of your dining room, the grand dining room in the Morrigan estate. Describe it for us.
The grand dining room is obviously a very, like, opulent, sort of showy area of the house, because it's where Father would host anybody of note, and often people of note with the standing that we had in society or continue to have. It is a very large table, because when anybody of note is there, all of the Morrigans are required to also be there.
Jeez. Okay. So it is this long table, ornate, like, white and gold, like, tablecloth that sits at least 13 people. No, I'm sorry. No. 15 people because of the parents.
18.
And 20.
So yeah, it's probably, yeah. I think there is, you know, the main table itself probably sits about 25 people. There is another table that is often set up
mm-hmm.
Because the younger Morrigans have to earn their place at the adult table.
Jesus.
And this was one of the first dinners that Avery was invited to be a part of the adult table.
Okay. Is this a moment where your father had company?
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, okay. The image that comes to your mind is this opulent dining room, long white and gold tablecloth on this fine mahogany table, crafted by some of the finest hands and woodworkers of the Holy Marvellan Empire. There is a small band playing in the corner. It's a string quartet. Yes, please.
There is a couple of hired musicians, but they are music teachers. The rest of the band is comprised of Morrigan children.
Amazing. Wonderful. So there are these, let's say there are three of these music teachers who are accompanying and kind of helping guide along some of Avery's younger siblings. There's probably Sarah and the twins, I imagine, are the three Morrigans here playing. Just very lightly, you know. They know not to play too loud as to drown out conversation, but loud enough to cover any silences that may arise. Sitting at the head of the table is, of course, your father, concertmaster Cassius Morrigan III. Sitting next to him is your mother, Meredith Morrigan. Both of them wearing their finest gowns and dressery and jewels and stuff to be able to properly host the fine guests that are here. I imagine there are just several high-ranking members within the church who have come to merely have a fine conversation and meal with your father and maybe some light work on the side. Sitting at the table, at the adult table alongside you, is of course your eldest brother, Cassius IV, your two other older siblings, Garen and Griffin, your older brother, Everett, and your younger sister, Violet. These are the ones who have been able to make it today for dinner. You're, of course, having a large, like, roasted pork, like, pig. There's a whole pig that has been spit roasted and lots of sautéed vegetables and other, probably, like, rice dishes and soups and all sorts of spiced vegetables and other like smaller meats like chicken and such that you all are having. And while you're sitting at the table, some conversation is going on. It's light work, not too much. But during it, there is a sudden break in the conversation as all of you turn your attention towards your older brother, Everett, whom I'm imagining is sitting probably next to you, being that the two of you are so close in age. At this time, you're probably like, what, 13 or 14, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah. And so if you're like, let's say you're 14, that makes Everett
16.
16, yes. He is this tall, broad-shouldered young man. Wearing some similarly, he is also dressed finely in like a gray and white like suit coat with a big poofy like shirt under it, long like tasseled pants and like fine like black leather shoes. And you know Everett is usually quiet. He knows not to intrude on conversations. But for some reason, in this moment, your brother has stood up from his seat and begun to tell a story. Speaking over your father in this moment, like kind of cutting off his conversation. And you can see your father as he narrows his eyes and like tries to like, there's like the first couple of times where he like clears his throat, but Everett keeps telling this story. And it's the story of a young man who in a fit of rage at his drunken father, who has once again gambled away all of their savings and leaving them without any money to be able to pay for food that night. And in a fit of rage and frustration, strangles his father, watching as the life slips away from him, as his eyes grow cold and lifeless. And as he's telling the story, you know, first your father kind of tries to interrupt but doesn't. But then as people are listening and people are becoming more disturbed by not just the story itself, but the level of detail. Everett goes into small things about what the place looks like, the feeling of what it felt like to be suffocated, to have your neck broken by the hands of your son, and the way that it felt to break the neck of your father. And as he is telling the story, your father slams his fist on the table and yells at him to get out immediately. Not just this room, but of the estate. Pack your things, leave. No son of mine will interrupt dinner with such stories, such terrible tragedies, such sinful, heinous acts. He dresses your brother down in that moment. Not just for this one thing, but of saying that, of course, I should have seen this coming from you. He's a person who tries and then doesn't meet expectations. He's a failure in that way of never quite meeting up to what your father wanted from him, what the family needed from him. And all of you, all of your family, sit in silence as your father berates your brother in front of company, in front of the rest of the family, in front of all of the servants and the waiters who are bringing out the next course and the chef who's looking through the door originally to see, you know, how people, you know, were feeling about this meal. But now more just like, oh, shit, what the fuck's going on? What do you do in this moment, Avery?
I think in the moments where Everett was, you know, given a chance to stop, I, you know, have tried to tug him back down or tried to, you know, join in and like stop.
And he stands there. He keeps doing it. And he can't, you see exactly. Him? It's almost as if like something has possessed him in this moment. He is so stiff, and he's telling the story, but it's, and as detailed as it is, there's almost no life to him as he's telling this story. It's almost as if something else is speaking through him. And I think there's a moment where you're like tugging at his sleeve as this is happening. And like, you can almost like tell, like his fingers are trying to like reach out and grab your hand as well. But he's not quite able to make that motion for some reason or another.
Yeah. So I try to, you know, I try to tug on his sleeve. I try to like shush him as well. But I mean, when I just see the state that he's in and then start to witness the unfolding of it, I'm silent. I don't do anything but watch. Mostly in horror, but also in fear. And that regret of not speaking on Everett's behalf, not standing up for him in any way, has just always been a small pit in just the bottom of my soul ever since that day. And it's my greatest regret that I did nothing in that moment.
As you're watching the scene play out, and eventually it gets to the point where the yelling is done, there is silence, and Everett starts to turn and walk away, and there's a couple of steps that he takes before the scene freezes. And you can feel, as you are in your mind's eye, looking through your eyes at this past version of yourself, you feel against the edges of your fingers the hum, the vibration of the arrow that is in your hand in the present. And you can kind of understand almost intuitively that you could change this if you would like. Is there something that Avery would have now, in the present moment, that he would have rather his response to this be in this moment, watching his brother leave? Ashamed and alone.
I think the worst
part of the entire thing is Avery wishes things had been different and wishes that he had said something on Everett's behalf, but knows in his heart that he wouldn't give up the luxuries that he's been afforded and the life that he's been given as one who's favored by his family, and knows that he wouldn't have changed it if it was like that. He knows that as much as he wishes that he was that person and was willing to speak for his brother, he wouldn't if it endangered himself.
And so Avery, you watch this moment, this moment in time, frozen, where you have the power, have been given the potential to put a new path forward for you and your brother Everett. And you choose to let the moment pass. The scene unfreezes, and you watch Everett walk away into the main door leading out of this room, where it would be the last time you would see him face to face. And then you're back in the present, your fingers centimeters from the arrow.
I'd like to try and break the shaft.
Oh, yeah, it's wood. It's wood. Yeah. The arrow shaft is wood. You can do that.
Okay, I can do that. And then the arrow head itself is what has been...
Mm-hmm.
It's made of, like, stone, isn't it?
It is this black stone, almost opalescent at the edges, where it, like, the edges of the arrowhead become so thin that you can almost, like, see through it like glass. But instead of being able to see completely through, it is this array of colors, probably the same kind of, like, teal and violet of Bryn's tattoos. It looks unlike any stone that Avery has seen.
Okay. Yeah. I'll break away the rest of the wood from it so that it's just the arrowhead, and mm-hmm. I'll put it into, like, the depths of my book bag.
Sounds good. And so, yeah, Avery, you make your way up to the room. You're probably the last one, I imagine. You see everybody else is here. Thorin, is Eldoris with you, or is it just you here?
We're both together.
Okay, got it. So Thorin, Eldoris, you see Bryn, Felix, and then also other officers of the Bois-Perdu. There's, Fonsaneva, the first mate, Orville Crowley, the quartermaster, who we haven't seen in a second, Chef Johan, and then also Dr. Aelif Blau. And in front of you, when you come in here, Avery, you see that they have the map spread out on the wooden table in the middle of this room, held down by some knickknacks or artifacts or other trinkets that Hanno has just had around, weighing down the edges.
Avery definitely has the energy of, like, college student who stayed up to write their paper all mm-hmm. night and is, like, running on fumes, but is still running. Like,
Yeah.
This person's going to crash at any moment.
Love that.
Thorin is finally the most rested person out of everyone.
Right. Thorin's like, hey, how's it going, guys? Come on, you ready to do this? For our listeners who can't see this map, maybe I'll post it. Yeah, I'll link it. I'll link it in the episode description so you all can find it. I might also post it on Twitter or whatever. But as a description, it is a map of the coast of Espinora and the island of where Paraiso Encantado is. And there is a line leading from there to the main coast of Espinora, where there is an X in between two palm trees, and then a second line that goes from there up to an island a bit further north, right off of the coast, where a second X is placed. And that is the map that you all are looking at in front of you. Once you enter the room, Avery, Captain Hano turns to you and says, "Ah, all right, that's the last of you. Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone was able to get a night's sleep, whether it be good or not. I hope it was at least restful. We potentially have a lot to get down to today. As you all know, thanks to young Avery, we were able to determine the secrets of this map, and that it is leading us to two destinations, one after the other. According to our navigator, we are right off the coast here, and points down to the map just a little bit of a ways away from the first X. We should make landfall in the next couple of hours. We can take that time to be able to figure out whatever the hell it is we're supposed to find there, and also potentially get some supplies and materials for the ship, since it we did take a bit of damage last night during that fight. Thank you again to Thorin, and she turns slightly over to you, Felix, kind of nods your direction. You can tell that there is some tension there.
Yeah.
And Felix, don't think we would have been able to make it out of there without both of your efforts. And again, also to young Avery again for dealing with the sea bat. It is becoming more clear to me that we have a ship full of very special individuals. And well, I guess I'll just leave it at that. On to today. I figure we take two crews out, one to focus on figuring out whatever the hell it is we're supposed to figure out here as far as the map is concerned, and another group to get some supplies. There is a town not too far away from here. It's a bit more inland, not coast, bit of the ways southeast of where we make landfall. Either that or if it's just wood we need, then, you know, we can send a few axemen to go chop down some trees and bring the wood back. Whatever works best. Thorin, I imagine you'll take head on that, or?
I certainly can. That's where I'm most useful for you.
I mean, if you would rather just send a crew, tell them what you need and have them come back, you know, you're the bosun. Up to you. I trust your decision.
I think I'll send a party out. I'd like to search the area with, I imagine, you and whomever else is looking for the actual, whatever it is. And then, of course, once materials are back around at the ship, then, of course, I can start repairing the hull and anything else that needs to be done.
All right.
I will potentially, however, send Eldoris in with someone. If she trusts anyone enough that's going in, she needs some new trinkets and seeds and things.
All right. Sounds good. I'll leave you to put that party together, figure out who the best among us can go take care of that. As for the crew heading on to, figuring out whatever the hell we're supposed to be here for, I'm planning on going. Fontaneva and I have already talked. She is going to stay on the ship during that period of time, since there's no real dock, so we can't quite make landfall. So someone's going to have to be on the ship. So Fontaneva, Orville, Johan, the three of you are all in charge, making sure that nothing goes wrong while we're gone, which I guess leaves Felix, Avery, Bryn, if you're feeling up to it. If you have any particular inclinations on what you would like to spend your time doing while we're doing this, feel more than free to let me know what you'd like to do so I can know where you're going and how best to support.
Bryn is detached from the conversation and still kind of looking past and through everyone, focusing on distant things in the room, and doesn't really process or hear anything that Hanno really had to say.
Yeah, I think Captain Hanno, like, kind of looks over to you, notices that you seem a bit off, and then turns back to Fontaneva and says, I might ask that you look after Bryn. She is still recovering from last night. The doctor did good work watching over her and, you know, making sure that she was no pun meant, but ship shape. So yes, I might ask that you watch over her. And Fontaneva nods and kind of moves over closer to where Bryn is. And then Hanno turns to look at you, Felix and Avery.
If I may, Captain.
Yes.
Especially considering if Bryn is going to be on the ship with Fontaneva, perhaps by the look on his face, I might maybe be able to tell something. Johan may want to go into the town, perhaps get some supplies for various meals. No one picks spices better than Johan himself, after all.
You see Johan is giving you this look like, yes, thank you. did not want to be stuck on the ship.
Yeah, Thorin is just giving Johan just this knowing look. It's like, you don't want to be on this boat when there's a spice merchant out here with fresh fish. I know that's some horse shit.
Yeah, no. You see him not, like, giving you that thank you nod. Hanno goes, yeah, Johan, if that works, if that's what you want, yeah, you can definitely be amongst the crew to head in for supplies. And you see Johan go, well, if you really need me to go down, I can go down with the, like,
What a crock of shit. Here, take Eldor, get him some nice seed. I trust you most with it.
Eldor's, like, flies over to, over to Johan's shoulder, who I don't know if I've ever described Johan. He is this tall, kind of beefy, but not quite in the way of, like, purely muscular. Like, there's some fat in there, too. Like, man likes himself a meal. Beefy black man with dreads coming down to about his shoulders, big bushy beard. He's got two piercings in his upper left eyebrow, these deep brown eyes. And he's got blue tattoos that ring around his arms and his neck as well. That's Johan. I would, if I had to fan cast him, I would probably fan cast Idris Elba.
I was about to say,
100%, I would. I don't know if Idris Elba could do, like, a Germanish accent, like a faux German accent. Probably. I don't see why.
Probably.
Eldor is, like, goes over, flies onto, over to his shoulder, and he takes, like, out a bit of, like, dried cracker from his apron pocket up to Eldoris, and she kind of nibbles at it.
Thank you, yo.
I'm very good, Eldor. And says, all right, Johan, you're going out. Avery, Felix? For the audience, everyone is reacting to this picture that I put in our cash out of Johan, and everyone is thirsting over this German chef man.
Avery is watching to see where everyone else is going. I think at the fact that Bryn will be staying behind, maybe like a flicker of disappointment, but otherwise wants to see where everyone else is going so that he can plan appropriately.
Yeah. So right now, the only ones that Avery has is that Thorin and Captain Hanno are going to be amongst the people who are going inland to or going to the coast to be able to find out, like,
more on the map.
Yeah, chances are something's buried here. And so, like, mm-hmm. I think Captain Hano, like, straight up just tells you all that, like, yeah, we're going digging is probably what's up.
Felix is quiet for a moment, just kind of staring blankly into space. And kind of suddenly, I think he, like, perks up and just goes, well, I would love an opportunity to get on some dry land. So I think a little treasure hunt sounds delightful.
Awesome. She goes, all right, sounds good. Avery?
I'll join Johan and Eldoris. Go into town and see the sights, get supplies, whatever's necessary.
All right.
Eldoris perks up when she hears that Avery is going to be coming.
Aww.
Aww.
No.
Adorbs.
Yeah, Captain Hano goes, all right, it sounds good. Thorn, give me the list of people who you are sending into town with.
Got it.
Avery and Johan. And so I can know what to tell the lads. Felix, you and I, we're getting some shovels. So meet me in the cargo hold. We'll get some materials.
Sounds fantastic.
Ready to get your hands dirty and stuff some creds in your pocket? Then get ready for Cyber Plus Punk Overload, the first official expansion of the award-winning sci-fi action TTRPG, Cyber Plus Punk. This game is powered by a super condensed version of John Harper's Forged in the Dark system, made specifically for action-packed one-shot sessions. Cyber Plus Punk puts you in the boots of a runner, living on the edge and stalking the shadows of a gritty, ultra-violent world full of megacorps, mercs, and pigs, all looking to f*** you over. And guess what? You've got one last run. Overload is a collection of 16 new scenarios that drop you into mega prisons, reality TV shows, time loops, Badlands, and even the Netscape. Plus, you get additional add-ons, including gear catalogs, new plug-in rule sets, and complete settings, all bundled into three sleek thematic packs. Ain't that just grand? And if that's not enough, if you back Cyber Plus Punk Overload on Kickstarter, you can even get an exclusive holo foil sleeve, making it seamless to take your game anywhere you're going. Now what the f*** are you waiting for? Go to Kickstarter now and back Cyber Plus Punk Overload. And good luck, runner. You're gonna need it.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon. Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To Death Metal Viking Cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude world. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
you all know what you're going to do, or supposed to do. Go do it. And Captain Hano walks around the table and kind of motions for you to follow her, Felix. And but she leaves before, like, watching to see if you do.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you just follow. Awesome.
I want to say, upon seeing everyone starting to move and, like, kind of feeling like the conversations have ended, Bryn, for a moment, kind of focuses back on the space around her and realizes that she's missed everything that everyone else has said. And her stomach sinks and her head starts to swarm with guilt.
Understandable. I think while you, like, I think when, like, people start moving and, like, you kind of perk up, like, with the recognition of, oh, shit, people are, like, walking around. Oh, man, a conversation happened. You suddenly recognize that Fontaneva is standing next to you and is kind of just leaning against one of the shelves that's, like, right behind her, arms crossed, silently watching as people, you know, start moving along and stuff. But she, yeah, she's there with you. She doesn't say anything, though.
Could I just see that Bryn has perked up in any way? And then I just wanted to over just to a quick thing, not like knowing that you've had any of this, like, epiphany.
Yeah.
But just the moment that I see, like, people are leaving and knowing that Bryn is going to be staying behind, I would walk over and somewhat conspiratorially just, like, lean in and ask, Bryn, if it's not too much trouble, I would really appreciate a moment of your time when I return from shore. I think there's much that I have questions about and want to discuss, if you'd be okay with that.
Oh, yeah, Avery. Of course. Whatever you need. Sorry, I'm not quite the best help, but I can try my best if any have any questions, of course.
Of course. I don't want to intrude on. I know that you had a awful.
No, it was hard. It was hard on everyone, Avery. It's quite fine. I'd be more than happy to help you out. I just you beg my pardon. Yes, of course. I can help you. Just whenever you just let me know what you need, and I can arrange it.
Are you feeling better?
Better's a funny word. I'm all right, Avery. I appreciate your consideration. Go about your day. Do as you must. I'll be here when you need me.
Okay, of course. Thank you, Bryn.
Oh, isn't about a thing, Avery. You're the one. I should be thanking you. You saved us.
I did nothing of the sort, but thank you.
Oh, modest.
Truthful.
Mm.
And I would just nod and walk away at that point.
Mm-hmm.
As Avery leaves the room, can I tell that there's something with Avery?
I think it would make sense. You were constantly feeling the hum of this place, and also this ship is not just a ship, it is also you. You hear and feel and... do you see? Can you see everywhere in the ship? Like, you can hear and feel everything?
If Bryn focuses, Bryn can make out the vague ideas of movements and figures within the vessel. But they're just kind of impressions. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Almost like a kind of like tremor sense, more so than like actual sight. Got it. In that case, I think you feel from Avery the vibration of the arrowhead deep in his bag, but you don't know for sure. You don't know, like, oh yes, that's the meteorite, right? Like you don't know that, but there is a more of a hum to him than there usually is.
Understood.
Awesome. So yes, Avery, you and Johan make your way out of here, leaving Fontaneva and Bryn to, their devices. Our camera follows Captain Hanno and Felix as the two of you start heading down to the cargo hold to be able to get the supplies that you need to be able to dig up whatever it is that's buried, if there is anything buried in the first place. I don't think she's very talkative, not as she usually is. Like, she would probably, under normal circumstances, try to find some kind of small talk with you just to fill the silence. But right now, I don't think she's doing that. I think her mind is busy with things. And so she doesn't even think to fill this space because there's already so much going on in her head. As you're walking down with her, I think like as you all are like making your way down, you all actually pass by Katarina, the cannon hand and the target of your assassination. And as you all are passing by her, Captain Hanno actually like grabs her by the shoulder and says, "Up, lass, you're coming with us. Got some digging to do, need strong hands." And she just kind of, she clocks you and kind of gives you like, you see her eyes grow wide and like, there's almost like there's this, I think you can tell that there is an excitement that has to be buried. And she just kind of nods and says, "Yeah, for sure, I can do that." And the three of you head further down to go and get stuff. And as you're getting stuff, what is going on through Felix's mind as you are down, like down here getting shovels and stuff with Captain Hanno and Katarina kind of treating this like this is any other day for them, you know? But how does Felix feeling in this moment? What's going on through his head?
Felix's thoughts this whole morning have basically been, you know, he's been sort of confronted with the reality that he has to either kill Katarina without anyone noticing, or he has to find a way out of this contract, which I don't think he knows how to do that necessarily.
Yeah, I wonder, is there any like, not necessarily like deal, but like, is there like a process, a system in which for like, if one of you are like, "I'm sorry, I can't do this job," for, is there a system in place for this? Is there a process or anything that would facilitate that? Or is it you get the job, you do the job?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much that. I think Felix doesn't know, like within this, I mean, he's just an assassin.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows about the, you know, broader sort of the intricacies and the decision making that goes on. You know, I don't think he necessarily knows how this all works, mm-hmm. but it has been presented to him for a very long time that if you get a job, you do the job. And if you don't, the consequences are bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You go down, you are, you know, Captain Hanno, like, finds some spare shovels, some canvas tarps for you all to use if such a thing were to be necessary, bags and stuff to be able to get. I think she kind of goes, like, "I don't know exactly what we're getting, how big it is, so I'm just going to get as much stuff as we think we might possibly need that, you know, maybe we can form some kind of stretcher or something to put a thing on and grab it." So I think she's getting like wooden poles, like canvas tarps. She's getting shovels. She's getting bags. She's getting like all this kind of stuff to be able to prepare themselves for like whatever it is that they're supposed to be getting. And while like she's like giving it to you and Katarina to be able to hold and like, you know, organize to make sure you have everything, out of the corner of your eye, you just keep getting this weird vibe from Katarina. She keeps glancing at you over her shoulder, and like when the two of you like lock eyes, she very quickly like looks away and then kind of like looks back again, that kind of deal. Does Felix do anything about it, or does he just let this happen?
I think Felix sort of maybe breaks the tension a little bit after, you know, one instance of, like, catching, you know, Katarina, like, you know, staring at him. Mm-hmm. I think he just goes, so, Katarina, was it?
Yeah, no, that's me. Katarina, Reichswin. And, like, goes to, like, puts her hand out as if to shake your hand and then realizes that that was a weird thing to do and, like, kind of holds it there for a second, like, looks at her hand and kind of slowly pulls it back and nervously laughs to herself.
I think like, Felix, like, has started to reach for her hand, like, just as she's pulling away. And it's just this, like, awkward, like,
okay. Wait, are we? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes, yeah, it's pleasure to have you along. How long have you been on this ship?
Oh, a couple of months now. Going about a year. It's exciting being out here on the waves with the crew on this ship. It's I get to see things I've never seen before in my life, and it's all very exciting, especially the work you do. Sorry, I'm just in awe. Last night was fascinating.
Oh, yes. I've been told it was quite the crew thought it was quite a spectacle.
It was.
I live to entertain.
She just gives you, like, this really, like, ecstatic, like, smile, too, like, a little too wide. And I think it's, like, around then that Captain Hano, like, comes back over. She's got some more stuff, kind of, like, sees what's happening here and goes, all right, you two, and, like, gives you like, throws, like, a bag in your hands and says, all right, let's go get the others. We'll be making landfall soon. Gotta get breakfast, of course. Don't want to go digging on an empty stomach, she says as she puts, like, four shovels, like, all in, like, one hand and, like, throws it, like, kind of, like, over her shoulder and has, like, a large, like, bag hanging by the by her hook and starts walking up. And, Katarina very, like, hurriedly, like, grabs all the things that's been given to her and nods to you gleefully. And starts to follow Captain Hano. Hey, Thorin, who are you sending?
I am sending Nigel, Cecil, Nanette, and Rook.
I think when Captain Hano gets back up to the main deck alongside Felix and Katarina, you very easily, you know, spotter kind of do you just like write a list or do you just like give her names?
Honestly, I think he knew from the get-go who he was gonna send and has already rounded them up in the group, like with whatever group is kind of going inland, and walks over to Hano and says, all right, with your okay, I've got Nigel, Nanette, Cecil, and Rook on standby for the accumulation of various supplies, with, at your order, Avery and Johan and Eldor at the head.
Of course. A fine group. Fine group. You all will do well. Go on, eat up, be prepared for landfall, and I trust you all to know what to do. You're all capable. And, awesome. So that is squared away. Avery, how have you been preparing for going into town with Johan and the rest of them to get supplies?
So I've definitely gone back to my quarters and grabbed, I have a letter that's been like wrapped up with, and there's like something inside of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have some coin and a note, my notes, not like one of my more important notes, but just, you know, running notes, a consistent notebook that I have with me at any point in time if I need to record things. Yeah, and I'm putting all of that in my book bag, and the arrowhead is still in there.
Awesome. So, yeah, you grab all your things. You head out of your room. You meet up. I guess, do you head up back up to the main deck, or do you head over to the kitchen where you know Johan is finishing up breakfast for everyone before landfall hits and Key, you, and everyone else is getting out of here?
Yeah. I think I would head over. I would head over to Johan because I see him as the de facto leader of that group that I'm going to be joining. And so I want to make sure that I am availing myself to him as well if he should need any assistance with anything during the excursion.
You head on over to the kitchen or the mess hall where you know Johan is working, and you can hear the sounds of cooking and smell the aromas of frying, the frying of leftover rice. And you come in and you see that there is like, there's like a large platter of fresh baked like flatbreads. And you're seeing like little like bowls and stuff of like leftover vegetables and meats from the previous day. And you can see that he's frying up like a little bit of the rice, and like throwing like some of those leftovers in to make a satisfying breakfast for all of you before you have to go in and work. And you see he's like standing there. I think I've described this before, where he has like a little like flattened like sandbox around like a very small fire pit. It's not quite like a fire. It's like a little campfire like on top of like the sandbox. And like hanging above it from the rafters by chains is this large flat pan. It's called a komal. It is this, kind of like flat pan. It dips a little inward towards the center of it. And that's where he's like frying stuff up. You see Eldoris is up in the rafters, like looking down at you when you come in. And Johan like notices you as he's busy stir frying and says, "Ah, Avery. Glad you were able to make it. Got to get some food in you before we make, before we got to go into town."
Of course. Is there anything that I need to be aware of that we need to accomplish on our excursion? I have a couple errands that I would like to run, but I don't want to interfere with any of the overall.
Oh, no worries.
You know, runnings of the ship.
Oh, yes. Well, no worries at all. Thorin's a good man. He's made the list. He's given it to the others that will be with us. We will primarily have the freedom to get the things that you and I need. You know, I've got my eyes on some possibly fresh fish or something. I'm coming up with the recipe as I'm cooking here now.
A is for albacore, a tasty tuna treat.
Ooh, albacore. That's very good.
We need to get trinkets and seeds.
I like reach up to like maybe pet Eldoris's beak. Just like a little stroke.
A kind Avery.
A Aww. Smart bird.
Ah, Eldoris has taken a liking to you.
It's hard not to take a liking to her.
However you can imagine what it would look like for a bird to blush, that's what's just happened.
It's more physical in the way.
Yes.
It's hard not to take a liking to her as well. She's a lovely bird.
Very, very. One of a kind. And temperament, that is.
She swoops back into the rafters of embarrassment.
Is she all right up there?
No. Eldoris is fine. She's can be a bit shy.
That's perfectly understandable. All right. So obviously when we
reach that, is there any, you know, time frame that I need to be sticking within? Are we going to be...
We'll probably just have it a day out there.
Okay.
So anything you can get done in a couple of hours, from my conversation earlier with the captain, it seems like a walk to the town should be probably somewhere around an hour and a half. Shouldn't be too long. We spend a couple of hours there, find what we need, and then we bring it back.
Very good. I will be happy to be on land again.
So it's nothing like land. Steady, less dangerous at times. You fall off of something on land, at least you hit the ground. You fall off here, ocean's deep.
That it is. Yes, I should be glad to have my feet on land again.
The sand has treats, the seas don't, so it's good to visit.
See? So smart. And I, like, look up at Eldor as I say that. I, like, say that basically to her.
She nods.
Like, Avery basically, like, says... Like, out loud, but, like, quietly, like, almost himself. I really should investigate more about you. And, like, makes a note about, like, research birds.
She cocks her head inquisitively.
Yeah, as you're in here, people slowly, like, make their way in. They grab, like, a small little, like, I'm imagining it's, like thin, like, tin plates. That have been kind of fashioned in a way out of, like, pretty cheap material. They slap on a piece of, like, the flatbread and, like, toss in, like, some of the rice and, like, meat and stuff, like, inside of it. And are, like, handing those off to people as they come in. Eventually, I think most of you make your way through here. And, yeah, as this is happening, Bryn, what have you been up to? Do you come down for breakfast? I know you don't eat, but this is where most of the activity is currently happening at the moment. Or are you somewhere else?
I think Bryn, before going to breakfast, Bryn is a bit overwhelmed by all the commotion, all the people, and feeling like she had failed them, and needs to kind of get some space and reattune herself. And I think that Bryn kind of goes for a walk topside and kind of heads towards her little space in the crow's nest. I do want to roll for Twist Fate, actually.
Okay, yeah, 100%. Ooh, also, this is a thing that we kind of skipped over, but because you did have a night of sleep, if you would like... You could get prophesized as well.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Cool. Whenever you sleep, you may receive a prophecy. Take the Starstruck weakness and roll plus Spitfire. If you already have the Starstruck weakness, you take -1 ongoing until the weakness is gone. I don't believe you have Starstruck right now.
No, I cleared that because I made the foolish decision.
Yes.
So I'll roll for a prophesize first. Okay, that is a 8.
Okay, on a 7 to 9, it's going to be the same as a 10+, but the fates get a raise. The fates being me, I may spend the raise to break reality and cause something strange and unnatural to occur. Mm-hmm. Love that. I'm going to keep that in my pocket. But as a 10+, any time within the next few days, you can pull luck strings and prophesy something strange or fortunate to occur. Describe what happens in your prophecy, and it will happen, logic and fates permitting.
Cool. So, but I can just hold on to that.
Yes. Yeah. At any point in the next few days, you can say a prophecy that you have received, and it will happen.
Understood. I think then what I want to happen... I think that's the thing, right? So Bryn leaves this discussion. I think Bryn's been thinking about this prophecy that she received kind of all morning. But Bryn does start heading up to her little spot in the crow's nest. And I do want to still roll Twist Fate.
So for Twist Fate, it is as usual. When you try to twist your fate, roll plus Spitfire. On a hit, pick one of the following options. Or you may spend a luck point to just treat it as a 10+, if you would like. You also have max luck. Everyone should.
Yeah, I'm just gonna use the luck to do it. I just want to do it.
Okay.
I think my max luck is 2, right? Because it's equal to your Spitfire.
It is equal to your Spitfire. That is correct.
Cool. So I spend 1 luck. I am going to... Your mana is something hidden in your pocket. What is it and how'd you get it? I think while down in the bottom of the ship, Bryn collected a few vials of her own, like, star fluid and kept a few vials of it.
Is it something that Bryn did or is this something that the doctor did and then gave you the vials?
I think Bryn did this on her own.
Okay.
Like, while in kind of a panic state in the bottom of the ship, started collecting mm-hmm. bottles of her own star fluid. And Bryn climbs into the crow's nest for a moment and pulls out an item that I have, which is an ancient book, parentheses, dangerous, on the secrets of star gods. And Bryn pulls out a quill and starts dipping the quill into that star fluid and is focusing on the energy and the feeling of where the arrow was in that crow's nest and just kind of channeling the feelings that she has around that and the sort of thoughts that it's brought her and the thoughts through which she gained last night and is detailing them inside this book. And I think that Bryn, you know, kind of is like writing and brings the book down with her into breakfast and kind of sits away from everyone else, floating a little bit above a chair, continuing to detail these ideas.
Very cool. So, yeah, you all are here having breakfast. There is a lot of, you know, talk and gossip about, you know, what is going to happen, you know, what they're going to find there on land. How are they going to find it? What are we even looking for? Still, everyone, like, to remind us that this map comes from one of the old pirate lords, one of the first ones, allegedly the 8th pirate lord, who no one knows or people have ideas of who they are, but primarily knows that they are someone who's very secretive, you know, potentially because of like this map and stuff and like the way it is like really into riddles or tricks, kind of whatever it is. It is not straightforward. It is not explicit what it is that you are looking for or how you're supposed to find it. And there's a lot of conversation about this as this is happening. At breakfast, does anybody have any conversations they want to get out of the way? Any small things they want to do? Things like that.
I think Bryn goes to Dr. Aleph Blau and starts to speak. And, Dr. Blau, if I could steal a moment of your time, if it's not a bother for you.
Well, yes. You see he's, like, stuffing his mouth. He's just like taken like the entirety of the fried rice, packed it into the flatbread and is just like munching on that. And he says, oh, yes, of course. All right. All right. Yes. How can I help you?
I'm not sure your skill set, but I'm not sure anyone else on the ship would have your expertise. You have experience sort of brewing tonics and potions, I could imagine, to some degree.
Tonics, potions, I've done such things, yes.
I have a few components I was looking to combine, and I was wondering if you could lend your expertise to this.
Perhaps, depending, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about a tonic for your health, or is this a poison?
It could be called many things by many people. I'd say it's a tonic for your health, maybe not the physical kind, the spiritual. I have a few components, and like Bryn reaches in to like them, like into their pockets, and produces like some of the vials and like some other like vials of like very, very fine meteorite dust. And
petals of stargazer lilies and these sort of small insects that have been known to twinkle brightly in the night sky, similar to fireflies, but with a bit more intensity and a bit more glare. It's actually not uncommon for sailors to confuse these for stars in the night sky and to drift off course because of it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Bryn is like, I'm looking to distill these into some sort of tonic to ingest safely.
Yes, do you, I get, and he's like looking at the things that you have in front of him. Well, I've never brewed this particular tonic before. I've never worked with these ingredients. I will need some assistance if you know what it is you're looking for out of this or even the process.
I have an idea. A helping hand and some advice would be much, much appreciated. You have much more experience. I just sort of gleaned the information from beyond the veil, if you will. And just piecing the little bits of the puzzle back together is, I thought, would be your expertise.
We will have time on the ship, so we can do it then. I will start preparing the lab. I guess it's kind of a lab. I'll start getting things together for you.
Of course, I appreciate it. Is there anything I can do for you?
No, I'm good.
Much appreciated, Doctor. Enjoy the rest of your meal.
Mm-hmm. And he nods to you, stuffs his face with the rest of the kind of fried rice wrap that he's made, and heads on back to his office. So we're going to cut forward ahead a little bit to when you all are here. Land ho, as it were. You all lower anchor a couple of hundred feet away from shore, a ways out, so that it's not so shallow that you all find yourself beached. But, you know, not so far that, you know, you all have to take the rafts too far, you know, to or from shore. And yeah, the teams are put together. It is the four hands that Thorn has put together, along with Avery and Johan and Eldoris, and the other group being Thorin, Felix, Captain Hanno, and Katarina. Everybody kind of like gives you your goodbyes. A few people give lists to Johan and some of the other people, like, hey, while you're in town, can you grab this for me? Stuff like that. And you all are lowered in the rafts into the water in your two respective boats. And you paddle your way to shore. The coastline of Espinora, it's gorgeous. It is this like kind of almost white sand kind of beach where the coast is like this glittery sheen of sand and minerals and little bits of pieces of shell. And littered across it are, you know, several palm trees rising from the sands. And you can tell that, like, the beach, like, elevates into this hill until it gets to, like, more flatter land where roads and stuff for people to be able to travel by are just far behind it. And then like past that, you can see the rising trees of like dense forests that go further inland. Do you all imagine that like the paddle rides are just like kind of quiet as just the sounds of water as whoever is the designated paddlers for either boat row you to the beach? Or is there some kind of conversations that are happening? Or
I certainly don't think it would be extraordinarily tranquil rowing paddle boats, you know, to the shore within tides is known to be a bit of a bear at the best of times. So I kind of imagine everybody probably quiet, but just like hyper-focused on fighting the tide.
Yeah.
and getting to that shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like this eagerness, maybe for some, maybe a terror.
Yeah.
Of what it feels like to be off the sea after so much time.
It takes you all like a couple of minutes or so, but eventually you all do find yourselves at shore. You're able to beach your little boats, throw your paddles inside, and the two groups kind of say their goodbyes before the supplies party heads into town, and you all and the treasure party gets ready to get the treasure. As you know, you're taking out the equipment and stuff that Captain Hano has gotten you and all of that. And I think before you all leave supplies party, Captain Hano turns to all of you and says, I don't imagine that what we're going to do is going to take too long, or that's the hope. We got a lot of beach to cover. So, you know what? Take as long as you need. We're probably going to be here. We're obviously not going to leave without you, but be careful. Be safe. Union Navy already probably has alerted local authorities. So let's keep your heads down. Don't cause trouble. I trust you all. And Johan kind of gives a nod. So does everyone else. And Eldoris obviously perched on his shoulder. And he gives a kind of pat on the back for Avery as you all turn around and head off. Avery, do you say anything to anyone before you head on off with the supplies group?
I think I maybe like make eye contact with Thorin and like seeing Eldoris and stuff, and I'll just kind of wave and be like, I'll take good care of her.
Bless you for it, lad.
And you turn and you start walking off and following them. But Avery, I think it's at the point where you meet the threshold between the beach and what is like the flat land that leads to the road and so on and so forth. I think as you take that first step, you feel that chill again, that something's watching you. And I think there's almost like this certain like jerking around as like, it doesn't even quite feel just like, oh, there's someone watching you. Like you feel the breath on your neck of someone behind you. And like, there's this split moment where you like turn to look and it's just them on the beach getting the rest of the stuff out of the boats. There's an odd feeling here, an ominous feeling here.
Yeah, just a bunch of deep breaths. And I think I'm going to, just knowing that the last time I felt this, I'm going to open up my notebook just to like see if I see anything again.
Yes. Ooh, very fun. Very fun. Avery, you open your journal, the same one that you were writing in yesterday night when you felt this same sensation of someone watching you. And sure enough, again, you open a page and you see in deep crimson red writing, almost as if it's blood, still fresh and wet. Every night when he would sleep, the weasel could hear Jacques. The weasel wasn't having fun. Pop will go the weasel.
I'm going to flip the page and then flip back.
And it's your notes again.
Yeah. Avery is going to close the notes up, put it back in his book bag, and say to himself, should probably get that taken care of. And just continue to wait for everybody to go into town.
Awesome. You turn around and you keep walking with them.
Very good.
Whew.
In-game moves. Ellis, for Thorin, did you defeat a major foe?
No.
Gain significant treasure?
No.
Accomplish one of your character's goals?
Look at my goal sheet again.
Yeah, your goals were progress as quickly through the mission as possible. I don't think that happened. learn more about everyone?
No, not really. obtain a good omen. No. So no.
Tragic. Got it. Okay. Awesome. Next up, Bryn. Did you realign yourself with the cosmos?
I think Bryn taking the moment to sit and write in the book and kind of focus on the prophecy, I would say that would count. I'm going to take an experience, and that is a level up.
Awesome. Repair the ship.
No.
Share the wonders of the stars with others.
No, not yet.
So every time you gain a level, you may choose one of the advancements listed on your character sheet. Some advancements can only be taken a set number of times. Others can be used as many times as you'd like. Your playbook will tell you which. As the navigator, you could add +1 to a skill, mark one additional luck every session, or take an advanced move.
I want one of them advanced moves, baby.
Yeah, which one are you getting?
Man, oof. There's ones that are better flavor-wise, but mechanically, some of the other ones are really interesting. Like, Kairos is insane, but, like, Star Chart is way more flavorful.
Okay.
Dude, I just read Kairos. That's insane.
Yeah, Kairos. For everyone, Kairos, if you wish to make time stand still, roll plus Spitfire. The Fates take a raise. On a 10+, the world stills for a minute. Only you and people you choose with whom you have rank are affected. On a 7-9, as with 10+, but it affects everyone but you.
No, I do take Kairos. Mm-hmm. I do take Kairos, actually.
Okay. Yeah, on a 6-, you can halt the progress, but only for a few moments.
There is a little bit of flavor in there that I really like. And I think this could be used in very interesting ways.
Okay, cool. Bryn controls time now, as if she wasn't already incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Bryn was just really lacking in the power department. No, so.
Yeah, I agree. awesome. Avery. Did you use your books more?
Not really.
Got it. Bryn Arrow? You didn't really give Bryn, no. And then you haven't sent the letter yet. Got it.
Would you consider, though, that the fact that I know what the arrow is and capable of is a gain of significant treasure?
Yeah. I would say that. Yeah. 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 I'd agree with that. Bam. That's 1 XP for you. Or, well, I'm sorry, you can choose. To either mark 1 experience, add 1 rank with someone, or clear all your weaknesses.
I'm going to take 1 rank with my last book.
Ooh, okay. Awesome. Felix, did you defeat a major foe? No.
No.
Gain significant treasure?
No.
No. Accomplish one of your goals? You didn't get the arrow. Damage control with Avery? Not particularly. No. Stay in control.
I guess, but like that wasn't really tested, so.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, the only opening Felix might have even had was at breakfast, where you could have poisoned the food if you would have liked. But it didn't really seem like Felix was interested in that anyway, so.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Member of the Rainbow Roll Network. Rainbow Roll.
Our stories, our voices.